This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much. Good morning. I'm not certain how I'm going to follow Joe, really, because I find that very inspirational. But I'm going to try. My name's Helen Wheatley. I'm the Assistant Director at the Council for Disabled Children. The Council for Disabled Children's national charity. We exist to work with local authorities, primary care trusts, other voluntary agencies, people who provide local services, and parents and young people, to look at practice and look at support and understand what works and what doesn't work, and try and promote and disseminate information on the stuff that does work to local areas around the country, and also use that to give evidence back to national government to help them form policy. And that's, in a nutshell, what the council does. Why am I here today? I'm here to talk about the Transition Support Programme. Some of you will know that in the last Treasury review that we had 3 years ago, the government of the time made a decision to put some additional funds into services for all disabled children. And they did that because they realised, and they heard evidence from us and various other people, that services for all disabled children, children with special educational needs, weren't really up to scratch. They were pretty inconsistent around the country, and although there was some very good practice, it wasn't really commonplace. And they identified a number of areas within services that they felt needed particular attention. There were short breaks, childcare, parents' forums, individual budgets, that work's still going on, and the transition support programme. And I like Joe's analogy of a rocket and service transformation being like a rocket. And at the start of the programme, I think what we wanted for the TSP was that it would act as a rocket, that there would be ring-fenced funding and additional support and expertise offered to every single local authority in the country. And those local authorities were encouraged, and there was an expectation placed on them, as there still is, to work with health colleagues, education colleagues, social care, adult social care, local voluntary agencies, commissioners, young people, parents, to all come together, get on the rocket and fly on the journey with lots and lots of input at the beginning, over a three-year period, hopefully levelling out into that kind of baseline, very good standard service. Now, you'll know there are some challenges to get into that baseline standard services at the moment, which I'll talk about in a minute. So where we started, the programme started in 2008, and we started really with a set of guidance already there about what good practice looks like around transition services. And again, I'm talking about for all young people with special education need and disability. Now, these two documents, for those of you who don't know them, are the documents that government use, really. One is, they're both joint produced by the Departments for Education and Health. And what they set out, really, is just a set of baseline standards around, minimum practice, minimum guidance around if you are following your statutory duties and guidance and white papers like Valuing People, then you would be doing the kind of work that's set out in these documents. These documents were published before Aiming High started, and they were the baseline that we started from. Then this happened, and we're now working with a different government who have a different set of ideas and policies around transition and guidance. However, the two documents I just talked about stand. They haven't been changed. We don't have any new legislation, and the statutes around transition and how to deliver services haven't changed. They may well do in the future, but at the moment we're still working to those same minimum standards and those same guidelines, and we would still say that what's in those documents constitutes a baseline of decent practice. Now, there are many current events occurring that will influence and affect the way that transition goes forward into the future. I suppose, well, I don't know, let's see. Does anybody not know there's a spending review announcement next week? No, it's interesting. Everyone's waiting for the spending review, me included. It will have a massive impact on public services. There is no doubt about that. But the only thing I will say about the spending review today is, yes, it will be devastating, and yes, there will be cuts, and yes, we will have to make very tough choices. But on the 21st of October, we will still be expected to go into work and deliver decent services. And this is not the first recession we have lived. Well, it may be the first recession some of you have lived through. I'm sorry, I'm making assumptions. But it certainly isn't the first recession I've lived through, which has led to huge cuts in public services. So whatever the spending review says, I think we can still plan around a set of key principles that will help us deliver and support young people through their transition experience. Now, one of the things my agency is doing when it's not worrying about the spending review is looking at the other policies and consultations that the new government have put out. And I just want to draw your attention to a few of them. There is a Liberating the NHS white paper out at the moment, which suggests enormous changes to the way that we access, all of us access mainstream health services like your GP, and also how the services behind that, so hospitals and specialist services, are constructed and paid for. If those changes go through, it will mean enormous change to the way that young disabled people access services and their gateways to that. Now, there are some real opportunities in that paper to look at the way that we commission things and look at the way that we respond to requests from local communities. There's an Education and Children's Bill, which follows on from the Academies Act that we now have. The Education and Children's Bill, although it has information in it about general disability issues, is not. It's certainly not focused around SEN and disability, and we're doing some work to try and change that. Alongside the Education and Children's Bill, there's an SEN and Disability Green Paper. Now, this is an initiative from the Department for Education, supported by the Cabinet Office, supported by David Cameron, Nick Clegg, and that kind of high-level government minister type. The reason they're supporting this, and they're very public about their support, is because the new coalition government, for all the spending cuts across the board, are very well disposed to be thinking about issues around disability, special educational needs, complex health needs, and they've made that quite clear. So they are very open about talking to people and groups about their experiences and opinions. And what they're looking for at the moment for this green paper is evidence. They want evidence from local authorities, evidence from charities, evidence from individuals about what works. If we're going to change the system of support, what should we change it to? Don't just tell us we should have individual budgets for everyone and we should offer people a glass of wine and a bit of cheesecake if they come to a person-centred planning review. Tell us what that will change and how it will affect outcomes. Now, that consultation closes this week. What it will lead to is a further consultation, which will last for 3 months later this year, on the substance of the Green Paper. Now, I mention that policy change to show that there is movement and there are places to influence, if that is your area of interest, the new government and the coalition. I also mention it alongside the much-anticipated Treasury review to show that there is movement and influence beyond the life of the cuts. But the one thing I want to underline, really, is that Ofsted did a review earlier this year, in fact, of in schools around the experience of young people with SEN. And throughout the melee of aiming high, the times before it and the times after it, guess what young people say they would like? I'll read it out. Successful relationships and friendships, independence, including choice about whom they live with, choice about what to do with their spare time, and the opportunity to work. And I bring your attention to that to show that really, I would say, for most young people I meet and work with, they really have no interest in knowing about who provides their services, the machinations between where the budget comes from those services, or what impact any cuts are going to have. What they want to know is how they can be supported to make and maintain friendships, how they can be supported to live independently, and what the best way is for them to get a job or engage in positive activities. And I can't really see that changing into the future. So I think that should be our primary and first focus going forward in how we plan to deliver services in more straitened times. Now, it's easy for me to say that, standing here, because I don't run a local service. I have worked in local services, but I now work for a national agency. What we did with the Transition Support Programme and in partnership with local authorities and parents and young people, is at the start of the programme, we asked, what is it that you want the programme to focus on? We've got this money, it's going directly out to local areas, it's ring-fenced, so it must be spent on disabled children's services at least, if not transition in particular. We can't do everything. We can't solve housing. We can't solve local transport. We can't put a leadership programme in to local authorities to change culture at that level. So where are the areas that you want us to focus on? And these were the areas that people said were most important. And the first one was participation of disabled children and their families in the transition process. And that was about having some kind of personalised review process that was appropriate, but it was also about being asked about local changes to services and being asked about how strategies, overarching strategies, were going to affect services. So it was about both levels of engagement. Then there was something about the effectiveness of personalised approaches, and Joe summed up perfectly what that means, really. It meant that there was lots and lots of talk. We were going out into authorities in various areas, and people were saying, yes, we're very personalised here in our approach. And then unpicking that, and actually what that meant was, in fact, that, yes, there was a beautiful review meeting held, and there were lots of stickers available, but often young people and their parents were still only being invited to that a week before, and having no support to feed into it. And actually the choices being offered to them there weren't, by any stretch, personalised. And that's not a criticism of the people involved. It's just, I think, an indication of the lack of training and support available to staff to take on new initiatives and to have time to reflect on what they mean and make sense of how they can deliver them effectively. Joint assessment processes. For those of you who are parents in the room, you will, well, if I were to give you £1 for every time you'd filled in the same details to either access a short break service or to help your child access something different, then you'd probably be quite rich by the time you left the room. So one of the things we wanted to look at was how you improve that and how you bring those assessment processes together. Realistic post-16 opportunities for living life. That was something that young people particularly wanted us to look at. And that was about what you do really actually after you leave college and what you do when you do want to look for a job, and that proves to be really difficult. And if you get a job, what young people wanted was to know what support would be ongoing for them, so that when it was difficult and when it was tricky and they were perhaps having issues going into work every day or understanding what their role was there, there was still someone to go back to. And strategic joint partnership working, one thing that came out incredibly strongly and continues to do so now from professionals was very much that message of how can you help us bring together the right people around the table to plan effective services? How can we support colleagues to come together from agencies that have different targets, different assessment mechanisms and different budget streams? How can we all get together around the same table? So that's what we set out to do and have as our 5 focus areas. There's lots of information on the website and case studies about each of those areas I've talked about, and there's information downstairs that my colleagues brought if you're particularly interested. What I wanted to draw out today was just a couple of examples of where local authorities have taken on those ideas and tried to work at providing a service differently. And I think to try and provide a service differently, even 2 years ago when we started this work, takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage for you to decide to address something that you know really, really isn't working locally. And it also takes a lot of time and commitment. In many local areas, one of the things that families say very often, and young people, is, well, you know, it was pretty bad until Susan came along. Because Susan was really brilliant, and even though she worked in Connection, she made time to go and see the Director of Social Services to talk about this, and she brought families together, and she did this, that, and the other. And it's those passionate individuals that often carry forward change in local areas. Now, if we could capture every passionate individual from local areas and put them in a room with all the other passionate people and then send them out again, then that would be great. And we could disseminate them equally around the country. But that's not the way things work. And so changing culture and understanding how to support people to do that in local areas became one of our key objectives, really, not just around the transition support programme, but around aiming high in general, because we saw that as something that would mean lasting change. So Oldham is an area that has pretty good support, by and large, not perfect by any means, for disabled children. And one of the things they'd identified was that many children, young people with autism and complex needs were being placed consistently out of borough, out of area. And when they came back into the area, guess what? They felt very displaced. They found it difficult to make friends. They didn't really know what local resources were available to them. And often they ended up going back to live with their parents, which is pretty dispiriting. Well, many of those young people found that a dispiriting experience. So one of the things that Oldham have done, which I think is quite brave, is they did their forecasts into the future, and I, like Joe has just done, identified the cost of bringing someone back into the local area and then providing very traditional type support for them. And then they looked at the cost of working with a local house builder in designing a set of bespoke houses for young people with complex needs and challenging behaviour to move into on a new estate. And the house builder said they'd work with the local authority. The local authority then went and identified young people who wanted to be involved in that scheme in their residential schools, brought them back into Oldham to help design the properties that they're now going to move into later this year. The first two young women with autism move into their spanking new house later this year with a package of support, as Carol talked about. But hopefully that's a different way of working, and it came about because the local authority listened to young people. Now, I have only a few minutes left, so I will skip through the examples. Warwickshire now have a dedicated autism broker service, and that's because in Warwickshire they identified that many young people who were accessing services from disabled children's social care were not eligible for services in adult social care because of different ways of working, and so they've developed this broker service that works with young people who won't get an adult service but who will really benefit from additional support going on into their adult life to find work and independence. North East Lincolnshire have done a very exciting piece of work with their commissioners across health and social care to look at how you use person-centred plans. So they are trying to crack the idea of how you get an effective person-centred plan and then how you use data from it to actually inform services that commissioners then buy in. There are case studies on the website. This one isn't up yet, but if you are particularly interested in commissioning across services, I'd be happy to send you further information on that. Now, what has Aiming High changed? You know, there's been this investment. It continues until March 2011, so we've got 6 months left of work on this. I would say some of the things it's done is it has consolidated the voice of parents, and I say parents, but I mean parents and carers, I don't mean young people, and I'll say why in a minute. But it has made their voice strong and a voice that's listened to and accepted. It's created a huge bank of evidence on effective ways of working. And really, you know, I can't say enough how much easier it makes it if you're trying to do something locally and just banging your head against a wall because you can't get the right information, you can't get people to work with you on it, to go and have a chat with somebody who's already done it, either in your region, or go and read through a bit of a detailed case study or look at a checklist. I think one of the key things for me is there's been a real shift from dealing with young people and dealing with their families into working with and working alongside for professionals. And I think that is a cultural shift that we've seen come gradually that now feels like it actually might be almost commonplace, that families and young people are not a problem that come into the office to be dealt with, but they are partners to work with to get the best out of what we've got available. And just thinking about the cuts in services that are certainly coming, if we think about the Aim in High for Disabled Children core offer, the principles behind it, I think, stand strong. There's a principle around transparency. Be honest about what funding's available. If you're facing 40% cuts in your connection service, then that's what you're facing. And some of the people who will help you understand how to make the most of what you've got left are the parents that people like IAG and Connections are supposed to support. If you start shutting down and battening down the hatches and not working multi-agency on this, then that's when the problems will really start kicking in, because I do think we have to work together to survive to some degree. Positive outcomes for all young people are no longer seen as massively outlandish. We talk about young people going into work, having college courses that possibly aren't about gardening and cooking, and that doesn't sound like a pie-in-the-sky notion anymore, which I think is a really good improvement. And disabled children, young people and families, as I said, continue to be a very high-profile political issue for the coalition government, which can only be a good thing. Our focus until the end of the programme is about consolidating the voice of young people, which is something that's been kind of left behind a little bit, I think, across the programme because of where the programme started from. We need to continue to push improvements in local areas with our named advisors. We need to continue pushing resources out there and gathering evidence in. And most of all, we need to support people to sustain that change, because the money that got the rocket off the ground runs out in 2011. And it will also impact, obviously, because where people would have put services into baseline budgets, those budgets may or may not be available. So the rocket might dip a bit, but I'm thinking it won't crash. And that's all from me.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.